This episode is a conversation with English writer and journalist Wendy Moore, which was conducted in English. Before continuing with the episode, I will say a few words in Spanish for my Spanish-speaking podcast listeners. Este es un episodio muy especial porque es una conversación con la escritora y periodista británica Wendy Moore, quien nos atendió vía Zoom desde Londres para dialogar sobre su libro más reciente, No Man's Land, una hermosa narración de un hecho histórico, cómo un grupo de mujeres liderados por Flora Murray y Louisa Garrett Anderson se hicieron cargo del primer hospital llevado solo por mujeres en Inglaterra durante la Primera Guerra Mundial. Una admirable historia de lucha por la igualdad de derechos, valor, coraje, amor y determinación que les recomiendo plenamente. Para que la conversación no perdiera su esencia, se publica como se grabó, en inglés. En caso que quieras oírla y verla en esta ocasión traducida, puedes ir a YouTube y buscar Aún Podemos Conversar, Wendy Moore, y tendrás la conversación subtitulada en español. De verdad, te recomiendo no perderte este episodio o la opción subtitulada. Wendy me regaló una charla para el recuerdo. In today's episode, we spoke to Wendy Moore about her book No Man's Land. As it's described in the Wall Street Journal, the absorbing and powerful story of two suffragette doctors who shattered social expectations and transformed modern medicine during the First World War. It's a book where Wendy illuminates a moment of global war and pandemic when women were, for the first time, allowed to operate on men. Their fortitude and brilliance serve as powerful reminders of what women can achieve against all odds. Wendy Moore is a journalist and author of several previous books, including How to Create the Perfect Wife and Wedlock, a Sunday Times bestseller. Her writing has appeared in The Times, The Guardian, The Observer, and The Sunday Telegraph. She lives in London. You can listen to the Aún Podemos Conversar podcast in your favorite platform, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, etc. And follow Aún Podemos Conversar in Instagram and Twitter.
Aún Podemos Conversar con Pedro Ramírez.
Hi, Wendy. Thank you very much for accepting the invitation to discuss your book, No Man's Land. The first thing that I must tell you is that I love your book very, very much. I really enjoy reading about contemporary history, especially when it comes to the world wars. Discovering stories that have been forgotten, or maybe like this story, deliberately put aside, but the story of the heroic woman who worked at Endell Street, a story that is certainly fascinating, is exciting. Can you please tell us a little bit about the book for our listeners who have yet to read it?
Okay, well, I'm very delighted to join you, Pedro. Thank you very much for inviting me. Well, Endell Street is about, Endell Street is the name of the book in the UK. It's called No Man's Land in America. It's the story of women who ran a hospital, military hospital in London during the First World War. It was the only hospital within the British Army that was run and staffed by women. And they treated 26,000 wounded soldiers throughout the First World War. So all the doctors were female, the nurses obviously were female, all the orderlies, so the stretcher bearers, cooks, cleaners, clerks, all of those were women too. So it was unprecedented and unique.
And how did the idea of writing the story of Flora Murray, Louisa Garrett Anderson, and the extraordinary woman of Endell Street come about?
Well, I'm a journalist by training, and I write mainly about medical care. But I'm also interested in history. So I've written four books so far on medical or social history. This is my fifth book. My aim is to bring to life stories from the history of medicine, which I think are fascinating stories, but also important stories that tell us a lot today. And I came across the story of Endell Street when I saw a painting, and it's a painting of women in an operating theatre in a hospital. And I was fascinated because even today it's rare to see only women in an operating theatre. But this was a picture from the First World War. So that's how I heard about the hospital. And I was then intrigued and determined to find out more about it.
That's the picture of Francis Dodd, right?
That's exactly the one, yes.
The main protagonists, Dr. Flora Murray and Louisa Garrett Anderson, were suffragettes and participated in activities, marches. Louisa even spent 4 weeks in prison after a protest. Can you explain to us what it means to be a suffragette and how it differed from being a suffragist?
Mm-hmm. Yes, okay. So Flora Murray and Louisa Garrett Anderson were both women doctors, and they were both determined to fight for equality for women. They were both supporters of women getting the vote. In fact, Louisa's mother was the first British woman to train in this country to become a doctor, a woman doctor. And her aunt, Millicent Fawcett, was the leader of the suffragists. So she had a background in women's fight for equality. So initially, they both joined the suffragists, which was the National Union of Women's Suffrage Societies. So they were fighting for the vote, campaigning through democratic means to change the law. But they did not agree with militant activity. But the suffragettes, who were Mrs. Pankhurst's women's social and political union, they got fed up with being promised that things would change. So they started embarking on militant action. And it was quite violent action in places. They bombed places, they set fires, they smashed windows. And so Flora and Louisa both then joined Mrs. Pankhurst's suffragettes. And as you say, Louisa went to prison for 4 weeks for having smashed a window. And Flora, she was actually Mrs. Pankhurst's doctor. So she cared for lots of suffragettes who went to prison to help them to recover from that.
We can conclude that they were almost considered enemies of the state previous to the First World War, basically.
Indeed. I mean, they were taking a huge risk for their reputations as doctors. They were on very dangerous ground, really, especially Flora, I think, particularly, because she was campaigning against the government's campaign of force-feeding suffragettes. And she was helping some of the suffragettes to escape from police custody. So she was acting quite dangerously, really. And when war broke out, initially the army did not want women doctors. They were prejudiced against women doctors and believe that women could not possibly be capable of the same competence as men.
Yes, that must be frustrating, because it's not only that women not have the right to vote, but women doctors, as you say, were practically condemned to treat only women and children. And in the case of Louisa, who was a surgeon, she could forget about trying to perform surgeries, basically.
Yeah, yeah, yes, exactly. As you say, so women were not normally allowed to go to most medical schools. So most women doctors trained at a women-only medical school in London. And most women doctors were not allowed jobs in main hospitals, general hospitals. They were not allowed top jobs in surgery or other specialties. And to treat men was basically taboo. So before the war, Flora and Louisa both worked in treating only women and children. And it was immensely frustrating for them. They were very angry about that fact.
And for that same reason, in addition to the sincere willingness to volunteer to help their country at the beginning of the First World War, in the book, it is more than evident, at least for me, that another very powerful motivation for Louisa and Flora was the opportunity to prove that female doctors were capable to practice medicine in the same way of better than men.
Mm-hmm. Huh? Yes, I mean, yes, I think they did want to help their country, because when war broke out, both the suffragettes and the suffragists suspended their campaign, and they put all their efforts into helping Britain to win the war. But at the same time, Flora and Louisa saw the war as an opportunity. It was a chance to prove that they could do the same jobs as male doctors.
One of the aspects that caught my attention when reading the book is where the majority of female volunteers for the hospitals came from. Upper middle class, high class women, previously living in comfort, women who didn't know many struggles during their life, and then they are suddenly faced with a reality, living in first person, the horrors of war. These women, they were truly brave and admirable.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah. I mean, it's interesting because quite a few who were suffragettes, they had a lot of experience in being very organised, organising marches, campaigns, even, bombing campaigns. So they did have very good experience of organisation. But many of the other, so the women doctors, a lot of them were supporters of the suffragette movement. But many of the other staff were women from comfortable middle class, upper class backgrounds who'd never worked before. So they had they were used to having servants to wait on them. They didn't know how to cook, how to clean, how to make a bed. And then suddenly they were having to do all these things in the hospital. So it was a huge change, but they stepped up to the challenge, and they enjoyed it too. I think for many of them afterwards, they said it was the happiest time of their life.
Do you have a favorite character from the book? I have two, but I will let you answer first.
Okay. I'm very much...
Obviously, aside Flora and Louisa.
Yeah. Okay, I mean, I very much admire Flora and Louisa. A lot of people didn't find them especially lovable. They were very tough women, so quite hard bosses. So in some ways, I think, my favourite characters were the women who were very honest about how difficult the job was, at the same time as being determined to prove themselves. So I think two women in particular were my favourites. One was Vera Scantlebury. She was the Australian surgeon. So she sailed from Australia just to work at Endell Street. And she had only previously worked in a children's hospital. But she was determined to do her bit for the war. But she found it really difficult. She was she lacked confidence. She was really quite horrified by war, by military surgery, by the wounds that she saw. But she persevered and she stuck with it. And she was very honest about her emotions. But I'm also very fond of Nina Last. And she was a young orderly who wanted to work at the hospital. But she was actually didn't like the sight of blood. But she still was, you know, just decided she had to work there. And I suppose I'm particularly fond of her because I know her granddaughter. So because while writing the book, I did get to know quite a lot of families whose grandmothers and great aunts worked at Endell Street. So I feel like I've got that kind of connection. And in fact, I've got something from her. Her granddaughter gave me this bookmark. It's a little yellow bookmark that belonged to Nina. I treasure that, yeah.
Well, in fact, I will say Vera Scantelburi, the Australian woman, is a great character. And Marty Hodgson, too. Marty Hodgson, one of the orderlies, I think, or doctors.
Yes, Marty, yes.
Marty. And their stories allow me to see firsthand in details of what was happening on Endell Street, and both are a good example of the courage and tireless dedication of these women, so Barbara Last, Nina Last, and the whole team of Endell Street. You show me that, and you tell me that you have the opportunity to talk with the granddaughter of Nina, and at the same time, you had the opportunity within your research to read diaries and personal letters of the characters. Were you moved with any one of these particular documents?
Very much so. I mean, I think always when I'm researching a book, it's when I read letters and diaries written by people that the same people have touched those documents. That's always moving. You mentioned Marty Hodgson. And she's the woman who is in the photograph opening the door, the gate of Endell Street, which is my favourite photograph. And I also did meet her grandson. So I went to visit him to see an album of photographs that she collected. And inside the photograph album, he discovered for the first time a folder of letters from her. So they were the letters that she sent back when initially the women worked in France. They initially worked at a hospital in Paris. So that was an amazing moment to actually find these letters and to read her descriptions. So it's really reading those letters and the diaries that really brings the story to life.
There is a decisive moment in the book, in fact, in the story, the moment where Sid Alfred Keel offers our two protagonists the opportunity to take the challenge of running what will be Endell Street Hospital. As you wrote, they immediately accepted. But I don't know if you agree. They really had no choice, because if they didn't accept the challenge, they were agreeing or giving the reason to the people who say that women did not have the ability or the capacity or the courage to attend to do anything other than children and women. But at the same time, by accepting, they exposed themselves to the failure that a lot of male doctors wish you upon them so much.
Mm-hmm.
Basically.
That's very true. Because initially they had run two hospitals in France. So they'd set up a hospital in Paris and a hotel hospital near Boulogne, near the French line. But after, this was in autumn 1914. But after that, they were talking about coming home and going back to their old jobs. So they had got quite tired, I think, and were really expecting to come back to Britain and stop working. But then because army officials had seen their work and were so impressed by what they did, they were asked if they would then run a hospital in London. And that was partly necessity, because the army desperately needed more doctors and more hospital beds in London. But it was also because Sir Alfred Keogh, who was the head of the Army's medical service, he recognised that they had done a really good job and that women doctors would be really useful in the war. So it was a gamble, and he was warned not to do it. He was told by his colleagues that it was risky, that they would fail, but he took that risk. And Flora and Louisa, as you say, they couldn't really say no because they were really kind of holding the standard for women in medicine throughout Britain. So they had to prove that they could do it.
From this pivotal point, the story can be told in different, in various stages, without the intention of giving all the details, for which I invite listeners to buy and read the book, which is great. I will comment on some of them so that you can tell us a little more about them. First, a stage of success, where after initial doubts, especially from men, everyone surrenders to the efficiency, to the model organization, to the that the product, the protagonist carried in the hospital, and to the humanity and the warmth with the patients. But an important detail at this stage, as you told me previously, was the iron discipline and the maximum demand, the exigency of Louisa and Flora, which brought them both admiration, but at the same time, reproach, fear. Do you understand that this firm hand style, it was the only way they could meet the challenge ahead?
Yes, I think so. They were very tough bosses. They were hard taskmasters. They told the women that they had to be not only as good as men, but better than men. So a lot of the staff, they admired them hugely, but they were also in fear of them and were terrified if they had to be called up in front of them and disciplined for anything or if there were complaints. But I think they had no alternative. They had to be bosses just like men. They had to act like men. They saw themselves as leaders of that hospital, just in the same way that men ran military hospitals. And towards the end of the war, they won honours for that. They were given Commander of the British Empire Award. So they were recognised for that. But I admire them perhaps all the more because they did have to. They didn't make themselves likeable. They had to be strict and disciplined. But they did care. They cared hugely for their staff too. So they campaigned for equal rights and for equal pay for their staff. They did look after them, and they kept morale high all the time as well.
Yeah, their representations, Christmas parties.
Fancy dress parties.
Fancy dress parties, yeah.
They knew how to party as well.
Then, after they did a great job for almost 4 years, the war is about to end, and obviously the forces, the spirits were already at their limit, but suddenly comes a challenge, a brutal challenge, the Spanish flu, the so-called Spanish flu.
Yeah.
It was a terrible paradox that soldiers who survived from war died from an invisible enemy, and that the hospital staff itself began to fall with deaths that affect the, inclusive the hitherto undaunted Flora Moray. It seems like a bad joke. The story was about to have a happy ending, and suddenly Spanish flu took care of spoiling it.
Mm-hmm. Terrible. Yeah, it's shocking, really. And for the women who worked at the hospital, it was the really hardest time because they were all exhausted by the end of the war. Many of them were really worn out, quite some of their health had suffered, but they kept going throughout the war because of the community spirit, the camaraderie they had developed. And then the Spanish flu arrived. The second wave, which was the most lethal wave, arrived in Britain in November 1918, so the time when peace had just been agreed. And I should say, you called it, it's the so-called Spanish flu. It wasn't Spanish flu at all. It wasn't from Spain. It's simply that Spain is the first place that the cases were reported from, because Spain did not have censorship in the war. But it was an influenza pandemic in 1918 and 1919. And it was the darkest time, and many of the staff were quite depressed because they'd saved lots of lives, saved lots of men from disability during the war. But when the Spanish, when the flu came, they could do nothing against it. It was an invisible enemy that they could not fight. They had no treatment available. So lots of men died of the flu in the hospital. So more men died per week of the flu than died in the war. And it affected the staff as well. So about more than 20 of the staff became ill, and at least four of them died of the flu. So Flora Murray in particular became very distressed and depressed, and felt she couldn't carry on for a while. One of the staff, Nina, in fact, talked about her seeing Flora crying, which was, nobody had seen that before. So it was a really, really difficult time. But they got through.
Yeah.
But maybe that's a lesson for us all as well. They kept going. They persevered. They did keep their spirits up. And the flu went away in the end. So let's all keep our fingers crossed as well.
Before talking about the legacy of this courageous woman, it's impossible not to ask you about how the story ends. For me, as a reader, it was bittersweet, because especially with respect to their work, one expected some sort of recognition, and yet during the post-war period, opportunities in the medical field were again denied to women who even suffered post-war aggressiveness from the men returning from the battlefield. It was as if everything that happened in those 5 years had been a mirage, an oasis in the middle of the desert, a real story that men, Churchill included, wanted to erase forever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a sad story to write in a way, because you want a happy ending at the end of the book. The hospital closed. They had proved women doctors could work exactly the same as men, that women could run a hospital. So nobody could then say women were not equal to men in medicine. Women did get the vote, so women over the age of 30 in Britain were given the vote, and that was seen as partly because of their war work, in not just in medicine, but in lots of other areas too. But the women doctors and all the women staff who worked at Endell Street after the war, they were expected to go back to doing exactly the jobs they had done before. So medical schools closed to women again. Hospitals ended their contracts with women doctors who'd worked there during the war. Some of those hospitals had only stayed open because of the women doctors who worked there, and they refused to appoint women doctors again. So all the women doctors at Endell Street went back to treating women and children, or they had to retire or go abroad to work. And most of the orderlies, the general staff who worked there, they went back to their lives of leisure, which were back to social engagements and living with their families or getting married, but not fulfilling lives for many of them. So even it was not until the Second World War that women doctors were again wanted, when they had to work in the, they worked in the army again. But it was not until the 1970s that women doctors earned equal rights to work in medicine. So it's a shocking story, really, in lots of ways.
It's incredible the fear that men have when a woman appears to be equal to them. Well, some men, not obviously.
I think in lots of ways, you know, in some ways I understand it, because the men who came back from the war, they wanted their jobs back. The male doctors who'd worked in the war, they wanted to work back in the hospitals. So that's understandable. And they did feel threatened by women doctors. They felt their livelihoods were threatened. But at the same time, the women had proved they could do it. There was no reason why they shouldn't be allowed to work in medicine. And now in Britain, nearly 50% of women, of doctors, are female. So the National Health Service here is dependent on women doctors as much as men.
Well, that last that you say is the reason that I believe that the legacy, Luisa, Flora, and the woman of Endell Street, that legacy did not die, because I think that the effort they made, always honoring the motto of the suffragettes, deeds, not words, allowed their heroic actions to sow a seed for the benefit of the future generation of women. Mm-hmm. That's the legacy.
That's right. That is right, because they couldn't roll back the clock. They had shown that women doctors were equal for men, so nobody could then deny that in future. So yes, they had proved that, and that did eventually get home. But it took a very long time for that to happen.
Beyond that, there is still a long way to go before full equality, unfortunately. I think that if Luisa and Flora saw what has been achieved in these years, during these years, they will continue to be gloriously happy as their gravestone reads. I must confess that the end of the book, that part of the "we have been gloriously happy" almost moved to tears, really.
Well, yes, because, of course, we haven't mentioned the fact that they were also partners. Flora and Luisa, they lived together like a married couple. They were utterly devoted to each other. And in a way, the story is a love story as well, because they're showing that they could run Endell Street as a hospital, as a successful operation. That was a demonstration of their commitment, their love for each other. And sadly, Flora died not long after the war ended in 1923. I think she'd been really worn out by the war. But Luisa lived another 20 years. And then when she died, the words were added to Flora's gravestone: "We were gloriously happy," which always brings a tear to my eye as well.
Yeah.
But if they were alive today, they would still be fighting as well for more equality, I think. I don't think they would have been satisfied.
Well, yeah, happily, now there are a lot of Floras and Louis fighting. Yes. Wendy, thank you for your time. But above all, thank you for sharing this beautiful story, which today I wanted to honor. I wanted to honor this woman, really. I admire a lot the Endell Street woman. I want to honor that, inviting our listeners to read about it in your book. Your book is great, I insist. I enjoy it from the beginning to the end. And I don't know if you have any other thing to say. It was a pleasure talking to you, really.
Thank you very much indeed, Pedro. It's been a real delight to talk to you as well. And I'm so glad that you enjoyed the book. And yes, I hope other people enjoy it as well.
Thank you very much, Wendy.